This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Bridge Magazine senior writer Ron French tells us what he found about the state's increased spending on preschool, including some of the results from Southwest Michigan. But first, how would you make Kalamazoo a better place to live? A new program called Kalamazoo Connect is encouraging people to put their ideas forward. The Kalamazoo Public Library and One Place have started the program where people have the chance to offer their ideas in TED-style talks coming up on February 11th. Tom Andrews is the director of One Place, which is the library's support organization for nonprofit staff and volunteers in Kalamazoo. Tom Andrews, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here.
So how did this program get started? What got it off the ground?
Sure. Well, it's actually the combination of a couple of things. One Place for the last couple of years has been doing a quarterly networking event for nonprofit staff, volunteers, just a chance for people to connect up and talk informally and also to build some relationships across the sector. And as that has been going along, we connected up with some folks at the Kalamazoo Public Library who had seen, obviously, TED Talks, but also the kind of spin-offs of those, Ignites and Spark Talks and things like this. And we're looking at a way of bringing those types of things to Kalamazoo. And so as we got talking, it seemed like a natural next step for our Kalamazoo Nonprofit Connection quarterly marketing event or networking events. And we married the two together. And we'll be launching that off February 11th.
Is there any limit here? Can people suggest ideas related to transportation, education, the arts? Is it all on the table?
It's really all on the table, yes. It's wide open. It's really open to anything from individuals to nonprofit organizations, for-profit organizations, government agencies, anyone who's doing something that's innovative, maybe somewhat unique, but certainly focused on making greater Kalamazoo a better place to live and work.
What has the response been so far?
Well, it was surprisingly good for the first time. We put the call out for speakers or presenters. We got a dozen applicants, and all were pretty good, all had something to say. It was hard to narrow it down to three. And for those that aren't on the docket this time, we're carrying those into the next quarter and for our presentations in May.
What sort of criteria do you use here to figure out who you do want to invite to make these presentations?
Well, first of all, I think it's the key thing is to be focused on community building. It's something that benefits a wide audience and also maybe something that people can engage in their own way, either by at minimum talking it up or perhaps getting involved with themselves. So if it's a larger organization that's coming in to do this, we want to see what's a particular project. You know, give us a taste, not the whole nine yards of what you're looking to do. Or in some cases, it may just be an individual who's taking the reins and doing something neat and innovative and wants to get the word out and around.
So if somebody does show up on February 11th for this event, which is open to the public, What are they going to experience? What might they see?
Well, when we come in, we're going to dedicate the first 30 minutes or so to these presentations. So there'll be a program to start out with. Kevin King from the library will be our MC. And so he'll be up there and we'll have these three presenters give their 5 to 10 minute talks. And then following that, there'll be a time of just informal reception, discussion, networking with locally sourced refreshments, and just a chance for folks to follow up with presenters or meet and greet other folks that are there.
So why do this in the style of a TED Talk where somebody gets up and speaks? This has been going on for a while. I mean, we carry the TED Radio Hour here on WMUK. People are probably somewhat familiar with the format at this point. But why TED Talks as opposed to, perhaps publishing a report or a paper or something like that?
I think it's popular. It's out there. People are familiar with it. And so as presenters are coming in, they have an idea of kind of what they're getting into. But like I said, there's been some spin-offs of these things that take that kind of presentation format and maybe give it some other limitations. And so we're wanting it to be brief. We're wanting it to be 5 to 10 minutes and give people kind of a podium, a place where they have a chance to tell about their effort, put it out there in not necessarily an interactive style at that point, but just kind of lay it out and spark the imagination of folks who are in the room.
The release from the library says, are you one of the many area residents who engage in unique, innovative, even wild efforts to make Kalamazoo a great place to live and work? How wild can we get here if we want to?
Well, you know, wild is maybe in the eyes of the beholder, you know, wild in sense of out of the mainstream. For example, one of the individuals that'll be presenting is James Maddox. He's a 25-year-old guy with a passion, and his idea is A's for J's, and it builds off his experience of getting a strong start in high school. So he's working with freshmen in high school. And for every A that they earn on their report card, they get a chance in a drawing to win a pair of Air Jordans that he just purchases out of his pocket. But that's one aspect of a broader effort that's encouraging student achievement for people as they enter high school and make that transition. And he's been embraced by an area in high school and has a vision for spreading this thing out. It's not an organization. It's just a guy doing something because of his experience and his passion. So, in a sense, that's kind of wild. And so we're looking for those kind of things, as well as maybe others that are born out of already existing organizations or businesses.
But you mentioned there a 25-year-old. I think a lot of people see entrepreneurial ideas now coming from younger people. But is there still space for somebody in their 40s or 50s or whatever to come forward and participate in this program?
Oh, absolutely. There's been efforts at various levels coming in, and certainly with the push of creative aging and lifelong learning, I mean, there are folks who are in retirement doing some pretty wild things. But certainly from established organizations, another presenter, for example, is from the Kalamazoo Nature Center. Now, most of us have heard of the Kalamazoo Nature Center, maybe even been there. They have a wide range of things. But instead of presenting all that they do, Kyle Bibby will be coming in, and he'll be presenting on the Michigan Butterfly Project, which is engaging researchers, land managers, and enthusiast individuals all around, looking at how butterflies are indicators of environmental health. So kind of an interesting project, but it can invite people even in their own backyard to get involved in this type of thing.
Okay, you've mentioned two of the presenters now. It seems only fair that we give at least a little bit of detail about the third presenter on February 11th.
Sure. The third presenter is Kathy Pinto from Acorn Farms. And Acorn Farms is a newer nonprofit, and it's running programs to serve adults with autism. But they have this dream of a residential farming community with varieties of folks there working together, living together, that will serve not only adults with autism, but all the residents there. So it's a compelling vision, and they're getting a lot of traction in early life, and gives them a chance to talk about what can happen when you dream big and people start getting on your bandwagon with you.
When you were putting these together, did you want a certain mix of different ideas? And do you think you accomplished that with these three, that they perhaps represent some different ideas, some different types of people presenting them?
Well, the hope certainly was that we would get a variety of speakers in this case, larger organizations, smaller individuals. And we were just pleased to have that kind of mix come our way. Within that 12, we did have also a governmental group. We had a for-profit organization and a variety of other groups coming in. So we're hoping that as we move forward with this, we'll continue to get a wide variety and want to present that type of thing. It's as you put something on like this, since you can only do three, I think it's nice to have three varied voices coming at you. And there's no need to necessarily weave together a content theme or anything like that. But certainly it's looking at who's willing to step up and share their vision.
So when these are presented, is the hope that some people with the power to spread the word will be there, perhaps policymakers, perhaps people in business, perhaps people that can take this idea, expand upon it, make it greater than it currently is?
With not only policymakers, but just everyone. You know, we talk about knowledge is power, but shared knowledge is power and shared information. And so one of the strategic goals of One Place is to create strong collaborative connections across not just the nonprofit sector, but across Greater Kalamazoo. And this is one of the ways we're doing it, allowing people to present their vision and idea and using that as kind of a maybe an attractor or a hook to bring folks together, but then giving them time to just carry the conversation on, follow up and start to meet folks and see how what they're doing connects with what others are doing. Because we find, and we've seen this every time we've had one of our networking events, people get together and say they're surprised at how what they're doing connects with what others are doing. And some really interesting collaborations and support networks have come out of that.
Certainly, we all know that there's a bit of a fear of public speaking amongst the general populace. I believe that the joke by Jerry Seinfeld is most people at a funeral would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. But at the same time, do you think that offering this opportunity might foster some additional thinking, that if someone knows there's an opportunity to go somewhere and present for 5 minutes on an idea that perhaps has been kicking around their brain for a little while, maybe it'll give people another opportunity to think about things, and then the opportunity beyond that to present it.
Exactly. It serves a number of purposes in that way. It's obviously the stage on which to present the ideas and get the word out there. It's also the challenge to, you know, if you've got a great idea, you've got to get in front of people and talk about it. And here's maybe a safer or first way to do that. In fact, as we prepare for this event, we're going to have folks come in and rehearse. It helps them to kind of get ready early, but it also helps to stand up in the room, see the space they'll be in, and kind of take away that intimidation a little bit. So it'll be the second time, at least, when they actually do it, and to speak in front of a couple of folks that can provide some feedback and start to focus them in a good way. And that's a key skill for anybody that's wanting to get their ideas and dreams out there. And so it does help provide a little ooch, a little nudge in that direction for folks, and hopefully take some of the fear out of it.
What is the hope going forward with Kalamazoo Connect and these TED-style talks? Will there be more in the future?
Yes, well, this is our inaugural of this. And like I said, it grew out of a quarterly event and will continue as a quarterly event. So we plan to do this again in May and then in August and then next fall. So we'll be putting out the call about mid-April for others to other presenters to put their applications in and be considered to present. And we'll continue holding this until the next stage in its development comes along. You know, as long as it's meeting a need, as long as it's creating a level of interest and doing what it's set out to do, we'll continue doing it.
You mentioned that there were a number of good ideas this time around. So do those people have a chance to perhaps come back, apply again, and be considered down the road?
Yes, with pretty much everyone, it was a matter of saying, please apply again. And in some cases, it was a request to say, don't try to present too much. Focus on one project, one engaging kind of unique aspect that's really community building oriented. And then from there, you can follow up with folks on all that you do. But even some of the smaller organizations, they do a variety of things. So it's a matter of focus on one key thing, present it, and really put it out there in an engaging way.
Need to stipulate that this is still pretty early in the process, but has the initial experience led to you perhaps believing that there is a little more creativity out there and a little more innovation than maybe you thought there was when this got started?
You know, I've learned not to be surprised by things in Kalamazoo. It's just, Kalamazoo has, I don't know if it's in the water or in the air, but folks here don't just do things. They do things with a twist. They do things over and above. And so when I see things that are not just serving a need, but going over and above, or really big visions and people are tagging on to them, I'm just not surprised anymore. I said, there it is. That's what we're about. And that's why we love where we live. It's why people come here for school and stay here for the rest of their life. And it's a way for us then to help present a venue for that to not only spotlight a few folks, but also celebrate everyone who's catches that spirit and moves ahead with their own dreams and passions.
So if someone is hearing this and they say, hey, I've had this great idea for a long time and I've just been looking for the place to tell everyone about it, and they're perhaps thinking about this next round of Kalamazoo Connect TED Talks, What should they do?
Well, keep an eye on our OnePlace website. It's kpl.gov/OnePlace. And about mid-April, we'll be putting up the application and the call for the next round of presenters for the next Kalamazoo Connect, which will be in the middle of May.
And would you say that any idea, even if it sounds just a little crazy, is going to get a fair hearing with you guys?
Well, we want ideas that have some traction already. I mentioned the A's for J's. I mean, it's young, but he's been doing it a couple of years, and it's starting to get some traction. He's starting to be recognized by folks and seeing it as already having the first level impact. So it's one thing to have an idea, but we want to see that that's already got the first root down, you know, that's already starting to move along. There's a lot of things like that. And to be part of a really great idea and its launch and growth will be an extra benefit of doing this.
Tom Andrews, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Tom Andrews is the director of One Place at the Kalamazoo Public Library. The Kalamazoo Connect event featuring TED-style talks on improving the Kalamazoo community will be held on February 11th at the library. Links with more details can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In 2012, Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, found that 30,000 four-year-olds in the state qualified for free, high-quality preschool, but were not in the classroom. In the meantime, the state of Michigan has dedicated $130 million to its Great Start Readiness program. Bridge senior writer Ron French has visited the issue again to find out what that additional funding means for preschool in Michigan. Ron French, thank you for being with us.
It's always a pleasure.
What can you say about this additional money for preschool in Michigan? How big an impact is it making?
Thanks for having me on. First, we should say this was the biggest increase in preschool funding in the nation. The state really stepped up to the plate here and decided to try to do something. Over a two-year period since the money started flowing in, there have been an additional 21,000 four-year-olds who have had the opportunity to be in free high-quality preschool. And the impact of that, really what you're going to feel is probably over a period of years as these kids, you see how these kids do better in school. But it's really made a marked difference for low-income and moderate-income families in the state.
And you found an interesting geographic breakdown. For instance, 74% increase in Kalamazoo County. So what is that meaning for these students in terms of the instruction they're getting?
Yeah, it's a huge difference, and really that is probably understated for the amount of difference it's making in kids' lives. We have a breakdown for a two-year period looking at increases in number of kids being served by county in the state. And in Kalamazoo County, has one of the largest increases in the state, a 74% increase in number of four-year-olds who are taking advantage of this program. Van Buren over your way, it's a 33% increase. Calhoun County, 19% increase. But those increases are really understated because on top of the fact that there are more students in those programs, you will also find that many of those children are in full day preschool as opposed to half day, which is a vast amount more time for education and preparing these kids for kindergarten.
You also write that there has been an effort to provide transportation, which previously has been a big obstacle for parents who want to get their children into preschool.
One of the reasons that some families were not able to take advantage of this program in the past is because either they did not have transportation at all, because this is a program primarily set up for low and moderate income families, or the parents are working during the day and they can't take off in the middle of the day to either take their child or pick their child up from a preschool program. So having it a full day is both beneficial for the families and beneficial for the kids.
One of your stories focuses on the Vicksburg School District here in Kalamazoo County. What has happened in Vicksburg as a result of the changes in the Great Start Readiness Program?
Vicksburg is a great example of how this extra funding has helped children. Vicksburg, 2 years ago, had two half-day programs in one elementary school. And they have three elementary schools in the district, and one elementary had the program. Today, they have full-day programs in every one of their elementary schools, and those programs are 5 days instead of four. So let me tell you, Gordon, what a difference that makes. Instead of a child in Vicksburg having 12 hours of instruction a week, they now have 30 hours of instruction a week. You know, it's tailored for four-year-olds. They're not sitting there memorizing the capitals of the nation, but they are learning their ABCs. They're learning to write their name. They're getting prepared to actually be able to learn well in kindergarten.
You have an interesting quote from the Vicksburg superintendent saying we had to go out on a limb and assume we could fill the classrooms. As it turned out, they could have filled another class, he said. But I want to focus on that first part first. The idea that they had to go out on a limb, is there a component here where the districts have to sort of gauge how much interest there is and how much demand there is for preschool?
Absolutely. It takes a leap of faith to figure out when you expand programs whether you'll find the need out there. What happened in Vicksburg, and it's been a story that has played out in communities around the state, is that there had always been a waiting list to get into these programs, but they expanded it to such a great extent they did not know whether they'd be able to find these students. But once they expanded these programs to full day instead of half day, which allowed more families to take advantage of it, and they began providing transportation for these students, for these four-year-olds, which, again, allowed more students to come, the phones were ringing off the hook. There are already families calling. There are families already calling Vicksburg, signing up to reserve spots for next fall.
You also quoted the mother of one girl who was talking about the difference that she sees in her younger child compared to her older child who did not go through preschool. And of course, this is strictly one family. It's anecdotal, but it also is rather telling, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I think you would find this is pretty common. She had an older son who did not go through this program, who didn't know his ABCs until he was six. That's not unusual in the grand scheme of things in the past. But now her four-year-old daughter knows her ABCs now. You know, what does that mean over a period of time? Think about it. Instead of learning your ABCs in kindergarten, you're learning to pronounce words and put sentences together. And if you don't have to put sentences together in first grade, what are you doing? You're reading longer books. Early grade reading is the key to success in school all through your career. What experts say is that this sort of program 10, 12 years from now will probably mean that more kids are graduating from high school and more kids are prepared to go to college. And that's going to help not only those individual students, it's going to help the state economically.
And is that what Governor Snyder and state lawmakers who backed the additional money for the Great Start Readiness Program were thinking of when they approved money for preschool, is that there is a long-term benefit to the state?
Absolutely, that's what they were thinking. And that is why this program has such widespread support in the business community, because it is viewed as an investment for the state. It's no different than investing in fixing the potholes on our highways. We need that for our economy, and we need to have well-educated students to fill those really good, high-paying jobs of the future. Those high-paying jobs not only help those individuals, but those high-paying jobs provide more taxes to the state, which in turn can help pay for the potholes, to fix the potholes.
In this day and age when it seems that almost every issue is political and contentious, and that there's some sort of partisan divide, is funding for high-quality preschool a rare exception where there seems to be consensus, at least on the broad idea, that it is something that the state should invest in?
It really has been, and it's been surprising, Gordon. This is not broken down along political lines. What you find is that Democrats see this as a good thing for individuals, and it's a way to give the next generation a leg up. You find that conservative Republicans often favor it, too, because they view it as an economic investment for the state. It's one of those things that you don't have to worry that this isn't a debate over unions. It's not a debate over charter schools, because this is a program that the majority now are run in schools. But there also is an ability for individual private daycare centers to set up their own programs where they have Great Start Readiness programs. This is something where everyone sees this as a good investment for the state.
Well, let me interrupt a little bit of the good news here by just noting the numbers that are in the story here. As I noted, that 2012 story, about Michigan's forgotten four-year-olds found that almost 30,000 four-year-olds qualified for free high-quality preschool were not in classrooms. Your story tells us that more than 21,000 additional Michigan four-year-olds have enrolled in free high-quality preschool in the past 2 years. So there is a bit of a gap there. Is there more to be done in this area, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
There's still more to be done to reach out to low-income families who are often harder to find, and there's always more along those lines. One of those things that makes those numbers hard to compare, there were 30,000 children who were eligible for the program at that time who were not in a program. The financial standard for being in the program was changed when they added the money. At the time, you could qualify for the program if your family income was at or below 300% of the federal poverty line. The state, when they added the extra funding, ratcheted that down to 250%. So there are fewer people who qualify, but that's still a pretty decent level. You'll find that a family of four would still qualify for this program at about $55,000 a year. So low and moderate family income, and that it can still qualify for this program for free.
How did this issue of high-quality preschool take off, Ron, as you've examined it? I mean, you've written a lot about this, and I wonder how you see how it moved from something that was identified as a need to getting consensus to actually getting the money out there so that it could be put to work.
There were a few factors that were involved in that. First, there was a general recognition among state leaders, and I'm talking both political and business community and education leaders, that Michigan was falling behind other states academically. And that has all sorts of ramifications down the road economically. So how do you address that? More and more research seems to indicate that the way to fight that is to concentrate more on learning in early grades, specifically reading a lot of times. So there were studies that would show that high-quality preschool, the benefit of that carries on throughout a person's life. So what happens after that is that there was a large group of business leaders and community leaders in the state that got together and said, we need to address this, and the way to address it is high-quality preschool. We already have a program. We're just underfunding it. So there was groups that came together. They worked with legislators and the governor, and the governor was a huge supporter of this idea. So it was sort of a perfect storm that got the stars aligned, and everyone worked together on this over the past 2 or 3 years.
Any idea of what happens next? I mean, is this something that is still on the radar, or is it something where a fair amount of money's been provided and policymakers are now perhaps moving on and trying to solve other problems?
This is something that needs to be approved every year by the legislature. So every year there will have to be a decision made whether the funding continues at this level. It seems like it's had some good impact so far. But the next area, Gordon, that there may be discussion about is looking at whether the state will, if the state can do anything to improve education even younger. Is there anything that we can do in families' homes? And we're not talking about putting a two-year-old in a classroom, but is there something we can do in families' homes to help prepare kids for preschool now? So I think you're going to see some more discussion of what we can do in the 0 to 3 range.
Ron French, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Ron French is senior writer for Bridge. Links to their stories on preschool expansion can be found at bridgemi.com and also through links at wmuk.org. West Southwest can be heard Mondays and Thursdays on WMUK. It airs at 9:30 in the morning and again at 3:30 in the afternoon. And you can always find more information and past programs at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.